I don't know. So, Karen, what do you think? Are we on the eve of destruction? Okay, yep. Just pull that mic up there, start talking, and talking here. So,
well,
yeah. Oh, we're all sad.
Am I good?
You're fabulous. Oh, okay. My God, yes.
Good.
You're wonderful. Okay, so that's my question. Are we on the eve of destruction?
I don't believe so, but I'm eternally hopeful because look around, and you know I always bring it back to kids, but look at the kids that we have. Not just like in the world, but of course, specifically in Clear Creek, we have amazing kids who are not on the edge of destruction.
Yeah. And God, who was the group? And the Rascals. The kids are all right.
Yes.
I should have guessed. I should have brought that CD and played that, huh?
We could just hum that at the end or something.
We could. Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, or maybe not.
Yeah. You don't want to hear me humming.
All right. So welcome. And
you
now have, what, about 6 months on the job?
Yeah, about that. It feels more like 8, 9, 10, 15. But it's been an amazing start.
Uh-huh.
An amazing even kind of reflection, rest, and then come back after the start of the new year. And, you know, it just feels like a lot of the things that we were thinking about and talking about, now we're beginning to implement. And that feels good. That's exciting. That's, you know, you move from that stage of, I call it immersion, where you're really trying to understand a community and understand, you know, what are the needs here? What are the priorities? And what are my kids, more than anything, what do they want and what do they need? And once you begin to wrap your head around that and wrap your head around the community is when you can really do your best work. And that felt good. I mean, just an example of that is we'd been talking about what our priority areas would be ever since the coffee chats that I did this summer. You know, did lots of listening tours and continue to do those in schools and even include kids in those. After the first of the year, we finally rolled out our plan with our three areas. And although it's still in draft form, because that feedback from our stakeholders, it's so important, it feels good to finally have something tangible and begin to work through the different areas.
And, you know, so you had an immersion yourself, you
yes.
know, just coming to learn the community.
Yes.
You're familiar with it. You've been up here. We talked about that, you know. Quite a few decades now. Well, a couple decades anyway.
Right.
Now, because you were right in Jeffco.
Yeah.
And you spend a lot of time up here. So it wasn't exactly a whole new world you came into, but knowing the people, getting to know the community.
Yes.
What has struck you first? Let's talk about community. Then I want to come back to you talked about starting to work on these goals you had decided
yep.
on and focus. So what have you learned about the community that has just been revelatory?
There's so much that I could pull on, and this will sound almost oversimplified, but it is what has struck me over and over again. First, the sense of community, but then also just this dedication to the youth in Clear Creek. And what a gift, right? Like the folks that I interact with, whether they have kids or not in the system, people care deeply about what our kids are doing and thinking and feeling. And to a T, I've met people who have said, what can I do? How can I help? And so it's coordinating those efforts that becomes the exciting challenge. But that's one thing that I don't know if it's because we're smaller as a community or if I am somehow interacting with the most amazing, positive, hopeful people, or if it's that when you are articulate about your hopes and beliefs and dreams, people who resonate with that seek you out. I'm not sure what it is, but I can give multiple examples. You know, the chamber, the city, the Rotary, the Mountain Youth Network, the Economic Development Council. I can go on and on throughout the county of organizations that have either reached out directly or I've somehow met through other connections. And they're all about the kids.
Okay.
And that's amazing.
What seems to be their focus? Is it primarily education? Is it concern? Is something I want to talk about later
sure.
about the psychological place where the kids are today in terms of stress or, you know, what seems to you're picking up from the community itself?
Right. So, yeah, I would love to come back to the whole idea of teens and stress and anxiety and how we're talking about that as a community and as a society. I have some thoughts around that, I guess, and some worries. I think I hear more than anything a desire to think about learning differently. I don't hear folks who are hard and fast about test scores, I hear people who are really interested in creating and building experiences for our kids that will help them to find hope and value in the world. And I do think that's connected to some of the crisis that we're finding.
That's excellent, because what you're saying there is hopeful to me that we as an adult community are moving past that old traditional way of looking at education, you know, the brick and mortar, you're in rows and everything, not only experiential education, but the fact that the world is changing so rapidly that we don't even know what the jobs in 20 years are going to be, let alone, how to prepare for them other than to give them global, and skills that will be universal.
Yes. And that's a big part of our work. And that, I will tell you too, that having a school board and having a community that was seeking out a leader who had core beliefs around that is part of what attracted me to Clear Creek. And it has resonated throughout the different people that I've met. And it's an exciting conversation. I feel like in education, we've been thinking and talking about this for a number of years. And you know that too, being in education. And finally, we're beginning to see concrete examples of how it can look. So again, we've moved from kind of wringing our hands and saying, what are we going to do? Jobs will look different in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and our kids will change jobs multiple times. Right. And now we're moving into a place of, okay, so what are those skills, mindsets, characteristics that we need to ensure that our kids have? What do we need to deliver on when they leave us? And how do we create learning experiences that are outside of the classroom walls as well as inside? And we have a number of different things that, again, we're finally starting to see some implementation on. I'll name two, and then you can take the questions anywhere you want.
Okay.
And they fit together. One is the Homegrown Talent Initiative, which I've probably mentioned before when we met before. It was really early on that in partnership with a number of folks in the community, including parents and local business and Red Rocks, applied to be part of this initiative. Well, as it's played out, we've created this core team of educators and leaders and business and civic, and we are building work-based learning opportunities for our kids. So they'll have opportunities to job shadow, to do internships, to do apprenticeships. And I won't go into further detail there unless we go there later. A really concrete example, kind of within the same genre, is very exciting. And thanks to the Rotary, who brought it to us, we learned about Project Bike Tech, which we hope to have in place for next year at the high school, where we would have a room that basically looks like a bike shop, looks like kind of the mechanics part of the bike shop, where kids over time can earn an industry certification in being a bicycle mechanic. And that's only one part of it. And then over time, it'll expand to ski tech. And we've scratched the surface on that, but I feel like these gifts have fallen in our lap because, again, people throughout the county are kind of hearing what we're thinking about. Oh, hey, I've got this idea. Mm-hmm. They exist already across the nation. In fact, up in Summit, they've got it. Eagle's got it. And a handful of us heard the presentation, and I thought I was going to hug Mercedes Ross, the exec director. Like, I want this now for our kids. So it's pretty exciting.
Oh, that's awesome. And when you say bike tech, you know, think of the old auto shop.
Yeah, right.
That we had, which is still, still important.
Still super cool, yeah.
But, as we know about automobiles, unless you're a real technician, computer-oriented, you lift up the hood, you look at it, and roll your eyes and say, okay, I got to get this over.
Right.
But bikes, bicycles. And skiing,
yes.
Snowboarding.
Right.
These are something immediately in all the kids' lives, whether they're 16 or below or above, and they love to ride and everything. So what a great introduction to that.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant.
And it's relevant to our community, right? That's the idea of the Homegrown Talent Initiative, that we think about what's important in our community, where are maybe some of those workforce gaps, and that's a bigger conversation, but just initially, where can we concretely build experiences for our kids? And then, in our perfect world, they begin to see, I have a place here, or in the Front Range, or over the hill, but I offer value to my own community. And that, to me, is a huge key when we're thinking about social, emotional, and mental health of our kids. That idea that I have value, and that there's hope for me, I think that's one of the most important things that we can and should be providing to our kids.
You're reading my mind in a way that, because my question was going to follow up when you were talking about, for example, the bike or the ski, that yes, it's development of skills. How do I, you know, tune a snowboard or something of that nature? But there's other tangential that extended that are it's universal learning and so forth, and you're touching on that.
Yeah, and that fits, just to make one other connection, that fits well with the work we're doing around our Clear Creek School District graduate profile.
Okay.
That's part of this homegrown talent.
Would that be part of graduation requirements sort of stuff? It's all part of the program, you know, like 4 years of English, now you need to have, you know, sort of stuff.
Yes, but it's, I would say it's even bigger than that because it applies to every kid pre-K through 12th grade. And ironically, we just revised our graduation requirements to include three more menu options because they are the you're probably familiar, the graduation requirements changed a handful of years ago, and our juniors next year when they're seniors will be the first class who will graduate with these new requirements. We added AccuPlacer, we added industry certificate, so now think Project Bike Tech, and that's industry certificate, so much broader than that.
What was the first one? I didn't quite understand.
AccuPlacer. It's a test that kids can take, and it's they can take it multiple times. And it's just a little bit different than an SAT or an ACT. It's one more option.
And I'll ask for clarification periodically because we as educators are infamous for all of our acronyms and little language. And since I've been out of education formally, you know, for a decade or so, it's like, okay, so what's that? So, which is good because now I'm listening to, or hearing you as, you know, just everybody on the street is like, okay, what's that mean? Okay, so AccuPlacer, industry
certificate.
And,
and then the last one is called a capstone. And a capstone is an exhibition at the end of learning. It's a showcase, per se. It's an opportunity for kids to show what they learned in a different way. Because not every kid is going to rock it out on an SAT or an ACT standardized test.
Yeah.
And when we think about the experiences we want for our kids and the skills that we want to build, I want my kids to be articulate, effective communicators.
How do they do that? That presentation.
Capstone?
Capstone, yeah. Is it like in front of their class? Is it up on the stage in the auditorium? Are their parents involved? What does that look like?
Any and all of those things. We define that. In fact, we are bringing together what's called a capstone committee that will define how kids will move through the capstone project and then what the end product can look like. And my, I guess one of my preferences or guidelines will be there needs to be multiple ways that kids can demonstrate their learning through a capstone. And we should have some kind of authentic audience. So if there's a project that a student did, this, you know, maybe they really were interested in something to do with water rights, then their authentic audience at the end might include some water lawyers or local city folks. There should be some connection, and that helps kids see that this is not just about book learning or Googling something. It's a connection to those who live outside of my classroom. And all along the way in a capstone, they're accessing experts who are outside of their classroom to begin with. It really expands the idea of learning, and it wraps in the community as much as we're comfortable and we want to do that. And that's what we want for kids.
Excellent. So it could even take the format of they go to, let's say, the Board of Commissioners and do a presentation and have that recorded. You know, video recorded, so that somebody's standing there with their iPhone and, you know, and then they then demonstrate that they should take that video to whom now, let's say, because staff has to be involved in this. So do they have advisors that see this? How does that interact then with the staff structure?
I think almost like a college advisor. Okay. So someone who might have an interest or a passion in the same area that the student does, and it doesn't always work out perfectly, but once our educators begin to see what's possible, they'll figure out how they can even guide kids and how they can advise them. But every single kid has an advisor. Now, once you build this out over time, you can have community advisors, but you still have to have an educator on staff. Yeah, because at the end of the day, they're right now, maybe not in the future, but they're giving them grades and they're giving them credit, and that becomes, again, part of the graduation requirements.
And does this fall then primarily then domain of the high school teachers?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It'll. It's an interesting question because our King Murphy students just finished their exhibitions this last week. So that was, it's like a mini capstone. They they did very similar, like but on a smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
But a capstone specifically is for secondary, and for us, that's, we're doing high school, and again, that'll fit under the graduation requirements. Even though we have middle and high school in the same building, it begins as a ninth grader. So next year will be our pilot year. We'll have a small group of kids who will mess with it, and we'll have our capstone committee really figure out what's the best way to structure this, and then we'll go full implementation the following year because we want to make sure that we do it right.
I want to stay on the staff thing just a little bit as a retired teacher. And it's like, okay, all right, I already got this workload that is like here. I'm an English teacher. I got these essays, research papers, everything else. Now I'm going to do this here.
Right.
You know, and I love the idea sort of stuff, but there's still only 24 hours in a day and I'm already putting in 26.
Yep.
Okay. There's 7 days a week and I'm putting in 8.
Yeah.
Despite, you know, this other stuff out there in the community. Oh, you only work, you know, like this. And I'm sure the staff is excited and buying into this, you know, hopefully.
Yeah.
What is that, you know, their participation in terms of development of this and saying, okay, here are some things we're willing to do, and we can see this happening in a feasible manner, and then what, you know, these might be some hiccups here too.
Sure. So with facilitation, with guidance, they'll create what a capstone project will look like.
Because the staff.
The educators, the teachers.
Okay.
And at the same time, we absolutely have to be thoughtful about what's no longer important as we're shifting what learning can and should look like.
Okay.
What can we take off our plates? What do we feel like we have to do because we've always done it? And what can we think differently about? Now, as you know, we're in an interesting time because we still have accreditation and accountability and state testing. And we still have a post-secondary system that relies heavily on GPA and standardized tests. But I have a firm belief that over time that will shift because there's already conversations about it. There's already movements even throughout the state of Colorado to have different kinds of accountability and accreditation systems. In fact, there was some grant money available this year for some of the districts who were piloting different kinds of accreditation. So that will allow our educators over time to begin to shift how they spend their time. Right now, we only know what we know. And so we design our lessons based on what we know. We grade all the papers because that's what we were under the same grading system that we've been using forever. Those will change over time. As we design this, they've got to be part of the process.
Okay. And I want to remind our listening audience, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM 102.7 and 103.9, visiting here with Superintendent Karen Quambeck on the rabbit hole. And, you know, and I'm intrigued by what you're saying here, Karen, you know, with the capstone, the presentation, and they work with businesses and, you know, and other organizations, you know, to real-life learning experiences out there. And then I want to stay with the, so then post-graduation, like traditional four-year universities, you're right, they're starting to look at this here to say that, you know, back in my day and probably yours, they looked at your GPA and, you know, SAT scores and said, okay, you're in or out. It's far more expansive now, you know, that they look at the entire student and opening up doors there. So how does this then, because you mentioned this is not something original here. Summit's doing, I think you mentioned Eagle.
Project Bike Tech,
those specific ones, but this notion of growing. Yep. And I think the universities, from what I understand, and colleges are there as, you know, starting to look at, we're moving into a completely different paradigm.
Right.
And that's, go back to my point about, I'm so glad to hear that the folks, the adults here in Clear Creek are not like, you know, they got to go sit in rows and take tests and I want to see what their grade is at the end because that'll tell me if my kid's bright or dumb, you know, like crap, you know, like that. So with the post secondary, you know, life, mm-hmm. which all once they get to 18 and they're done and they're out. Okay.
Right.
Where they go to CU, Colorado College, Red Rocks, or go into the military, go into some type of apprentice program. Mm-hmm. What's this transition starting to look like? And I know it's a transition, so you can't just say it looks just like this. So any rate, what's that? This is exciting. I think it is.
So I will say it feels slow. I'm just going to call that out because I've got a senior right now, for example, who's applying to colleges, and it still feels like it's a little bit heavy on grades and test scores and what mm-hmm. have you. But you do hear more colleges saying, well, we want a portfolio, or we want to have you come and actually present or do some sort of experience where we can watch you. And I'm obviously more familiar with what we're doing in the land of 12th grade and below. And when I think about what you just said around apprenticeships and internships, one of the ideas behind us jumping on board with the Homegrown Talent Initiative is to give our kids opportunities where they can do those before they graduate so that they might not go mm-hmm. to a four-year liberal arts college and spend $100,000 or more than that over time.
And be massively in debt.
Yes. And then graduate and kind of put their hands up and say, I don't even think I want to be whatever they went to school for. So that's where we've got to be really conscientious about how do we prepare our kids in ways that they can make choices and they can dabble in something and then maybe go a different direction. Maybe they do some job shadowing before they even take on an internship or an apprenticeship while they're still in school. They can take some college-level classes. I mean, that's been around for a while, right?
Right.
While they're
AP
still in high school.
IB.
Concurrent enrollment, right? And then they don't have to pay for it. We pay for that. In fact, we got a concurrent enrollment grant to provide our teachers opportunities. If they want to teach college-level courses, we can pay for them to finish out whatever training they need to in a particular area. Many of them have what they need already. But we have a responsibility while our kids are still in high school to give them choices and opportunities to discover what they really like or what they super hate so they don't mm-hmm. graduate and spend a ton of money.
Right. Yeah. And avoid that debt there. So let's, you know, bring it back as you transition back to the kids, because
sure.
ultimately it is about them. Okay. And their lives, you know, that's what we as teachers, we're preparing them, you know, do it our best to get them out, you know, help them
launch
along
them.
The way, launch them.
Launch like, them well.
Exactly.
About
you
ready
know.
To launch.
And so let's talk about, you know, bring it back to the kids here and about, where we are in society, and we talked about this briefly earlier, you know, the incredible stress that they're under, you know, social media, everything's out there, their
yep.
lives, there's no such thing as private lives anymore among
right.
these kids, you know, and they're just living, and CPR, and I'm going to come back to this, Colorado Public Radio,
yep.
has run this incredible series, so you just need to go to CPR.org/teens. And it's amazing the conversations they're having with kids. And, you know, how programs like this can begin to ameliorate to help kids move past their worthiness, the idea of shame, the angst they feel about, I have to get these grades. And
yep.
boy, if I don't get into Colorado College, I'm a failure for life sort
yep.
of stuff. How do you see this dovetailing with the psychology of young adults?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that we talk about a lot, obviously, in education and think about a lot. And I had the opportunity, along with a few of my school board members, to actually hear Jenny Brundine down at the CASB conference in Colorado Springs. So that's the Colorado Association of School Boards, and she spoke specifically about the...
And what's her name again?
Jenny Brundine.
And what is her...
She is the reporter who is doing the work on CPR.
On CPR. Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
It sounded familiar.
Yep. Yeah. So she was talking about the interviews that she'd had with kids, and she was telling stories, and then it was fantastic. She was kind of freeform sharing, and here are some of the key things that I heard from kids. Mm-hmm. And I'll share some of those in just a minute. And then there were a number of other sessions that really provided some big ahas. And it made me reflect on Clear Creek in general. One of the things, I'll start out with a positive, and then I'll go right to that place of an, oh my goodness, we should be. A positive is our size. We are small. And some of the research says that in smaller systems, whether it's a small school or a small district or a small classroom, kids have a better chance of connecting with adults around them. And they mm-hmm. see fewer incidences of kids with highly impacted social emotional needs. Now, with that said, it's everywhere. We all know that, sure. right? We've got them right here in Clear Creek. We've got kids who are very impacted, and they are struggling with depression and anxiety. We deal with that on a regular basis, unfortunately. But I liked the fact that we've got a better chance in a small system. And it's about kids being known. Kids in our system, like when you're at the middle school or the high school or any of our elementary schools, not just that child's teacher, they all know the family and the child. And it's really it's a community feel. And I think that's contributed to a pretty amazing culture. Now, with that said, it's still a concern. And it's, again, something that we handle on a regular basis. I will come back to something I said earlier as we're thinking about how we interact with our kids and we build those learning experiences. I think one of the keys that we've missed in the past is this idea of hope. We have got to give our kids hope in themselves. They've got to be able to see that they've got a place in the world. And you mentioned a number of things that I think are ticking or chipping away at that. How we as adults even use social media is something we should be reflecting on. Am I, as a parent, constantly posting on Facebook only the lovely pictures of what my kids are doing? Or am I posting pictures that are real examples of our lives as a family that, relative, it's kind of messy, right? Like, life is messy. What perception do we give our kids? Because if all they see on social media, including what we as adults are posting, are these perfect pictures of perfect vacations and perfect dinners and perfect experiences. Ooh. I think our kids, and Jenny Bernina pointed this out, our kids begin to question themselves. They don't feel perfect all the time.
And their families, maybe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that was kind of a key aha. We also listened to a student panel. And as an educator, this stuck with me. The kids said, stop bringing in prepackaged programs. Invest in your teachers. Help your teachers understand that it's about relationships and it's about talking to kids in authentic ways. When you bring in a program and everyone uses the shiny laminated pictures and they've got the same lesson plans and you can go out and purchase these. I've used them before. The kids said it's not authentic. We sit there and we smile and we nod. And especially the secondary kids, the middle and the high school kids said, this is not authentic. We want to know that our teachers and the staff in the schools, they know us, they care about us, they're real with us, they're human. So invest in your teachers. And I went, oh my gosh, how much money have we spent in the wrong place?
Oh, what an original thought. Invest in the teachers. No, we got to keep testing, and
right?
judge schools. And
buy a package and bring it in. No, it's about the people.
It is relationships. And I think of, I loved, I was in the classroom for almost 30 years. And I think of one class in particular. I had them twice in the high school. Mm-hmm. I had a brain fuzz, prior year before. And I said, okay, I told the English department that I only wanted to teach freshmen next year. And of course, they all go like, okay. And I got this wonderful group of kids. They were, when it come to, quote, achievement,
yeah.
they were not at the top.
Yeah.
But they were the most sociable, they were lovable, nice. And I bonded with them, I just connected. And other teachers seemed to have problems. So at the end of their sophomore year, the administrator came in and said, would you mind taking them as juniors? And I said, I would love it.
That's
and
so
I did,
fun.
And I had just about the a whole class, I probably had 75-80% of at least once and 50-60% twice, you mm-hmm. know. So I got to know those kids and they got to know me. And it was such a powerful experience. They asked me to come back and talk at their graduation mm-hmm. and everything like that.
Yeah.
That is what, you know, that connection.
Yep.
Now, I've had great connections with many other kids. There were some kids I never made connections with and butted heads, and there you are, you know, because yep. we're human. But it just reminded me about the power of relationships.
Yep.
When you get to know them personally and what's happening in their families and finding out, another example, as I was getting down towards the end of my career, and I had these a brother and sister in the juniors, as juniors. And then as a senior, the one boy came back and he says, would you write me a letter of recommendation? I want to go to this school in Phoenix, Arizona for aviation, whatever. And I said, absolutely, I'll do it. We got talking about his family. I never realized that they were almost surviving on their own. That the father was gone, mm-hmm. mother was out doing everything she can, but literally the brother and sister were helping each other through, and I never knew their story
wow.
until he told me that. My heart was breaking.
Yeah.
I said, oh my God, you know, we don't know.
Right.
And I had another friend way back in the then, and I got all frustrated. He says, if you knew what a lot of these kids are going through before
yeah.
they come in, you'd be amazed they function as well as they do.
Yeah.
That is so hard to remember a lot of times, but we have to do that.
Yep.
Get to know them.
Yep. I think it just comes back to listening to the kids and
mm-hmm.
and allowing their voices to be louder than the adult voices in some cases
mm.
and making sure that when we're making decisions, when we're designing experiences, when we're even thinking about what electives we should be offering, our kids need to have a voice in that. Because that helps them see that as adults, we believe in them, we trust them, and then they begin to open up a little bit. And you're right, it comes back to relationships. And sometimes I wonder, are the kids smarter than we are? Well, I often feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And how many amazing ideas are we missing because we as the adults think that we have all the answers? That
yeah.
we, and so I think that's something we need to be keeping in our hearts and in our minds as we're doing anything in terms of educational improvement, school improvement. And again, I have to say it, singing the praises of the school district. Before I came in, that existed already.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at our student government, when you look at the Mountain Youth Network, when you look at the kids involved with Trek, we have solid student leaders. I'd like to get more involved. In fact, I'd like to have kids be an advisory group to our school board and ultimately have one or two sitting members on our school board. There are districts throughout Colorado who are piloting this, and
mm-hmm.
that's the right work because they know what the experiences are like.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and I'm thinking, and when you come back, we're going to have to come on back more frequently now. I think last time we talked was almost 6 months ago. But to get into the conversations, and I'm jumping off on, we mentioned the series on teens on
yep.
CPR, and you mentioned Jenny and
yep.
Her conversation there. And a couple of things that get into, and we won't have
mm-hmm.
time to talk about specifics here, but how technology, particularly computers and cell
yes.
phones, shape the brain itself.
Yes.
And the need for kids
yep.
to get away from that.
Yep.
And one of the tips they said, there is absolutely no technology in a bedroom.
Yeah.
Period.
Yep.
Bedrooms are for sleeping.
Yep.
Not to be on your cell phone in the middle of the night, you know, and playing video games and taking breaks from it as well. It's not to say you blow it off. We can't, you know, it's part of our lives. But how do we manage this here to, and they used it in this one, I think it was yesterday I was listening to it. And they said, it's kind of like working out, lifting weights.
Yep.
Okay. If you just went into a gym for 2 hours and did nothing but just keep lifting weights, like, what's going to happen to your body?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to, yeah, and you're going to blow out muscles and
yeah.
everything. Right? So this whole thing about stepping back from it and building a good relationship with the technology too and say, okay, enough. All this stuff goes into my head when I think of kids, where they are today and how different it is now compared to, and I don't know the answers, but I'm grateful to hear folks out there like you are leading the charge on this. Yeah, so I'm going to throw that back to you without a question.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, if we can talk about it today, or if you want me to come back and talk about technology.
Let's touch on it a little bit here, because we got about 5 minutes left, and we'll whet the appetite, we'll say, of the audience, and then we'll set up a time, you know, in a few weeks, and you come on back. But yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. So I kind of toggle back and forth between my mom brain and my educational leader brain. And although, you know, there's definitely intersection, I think about it from both perspectives. I watch my own kids with their cell phones that are basically, you know, an extension of their hand, right? And how do you teach them good use of that, good digital citizenship? How do I teach them that you don't need to be on Snapchat 24/7? Because you're changing your attention. Just like you said, you're changing how your brain is working, especially, this will sound a little goofy, but in my two kids, especially with my son, especially, and I see that with boys, they tend to get addicted faster to that technology. And it's really hard for them to let it go. And so how do I set healthy parameters? But I'm also dependent on it when they're out and about. I need to know where they are, and I might use Snap Map or I might text them. And so that's a tough balance, and it is really, really difficult. I've found that as a mom, I'm trying to model that better. I'm trying to not have my cell phone out in front of me and I'm kind of listening, but I'm on it. Nope, flip it over, it goes away. And then I'm trying to help them see that when you're interacting with other people, your phone goes away. And you don't have to be checking it constantly. As an educator, we're always wrestling with what's the balance, because just as you called out, this is part of our world. And our kids, you know, think 5, 10, 20 years from now, what technology will exist that we can't even dream of? Mm-hmm. So what do we owe our kids right now? Well, I think it's around helping them learn how to be flexible and adaptable in their own thinking and learn how to navigate technology with almost a cynical eye. How can you be critical as you're assessing different resources on the internet? And yet at the same time, when they want to learn something, they go to YouTube. Oh, I want to learn how to string a lacrosse stick. They go and they watch a video, and within a couple minutes, they're figuring things out. Sometimes they learn in spite of us using technology. We as the educators have to teach them, just like as a parent, good digital citizenship and intentional use of technology. And everything doesn't happen on a laptop. How can we consume and then create and then put it away? Because it's got a place, just like you're not using a pencil constantly. You use it when it's relevant and intentional. Yeah.
Wow. And just by you describing that, Karen, and detailing it, two thoughts come to mind. One is gender. Mm-hmm. Why boys get more addicted to it faster or more so than girls? You know what? Yeah. I mean, this is something we can like explore. Yep. Yeah. You know, what is it? Is something in the male brain versus the female brain, or is it the social? You know, because you know we have this traditional thing that girls are always, you know, like talking and all this other stuff, and boys are more quiet. And so you would think girls might be more on there. You know, it's stereotyping, of course. Right. You know. But does that point out that boys are also have this need for social connection, but they just can't admit it because I'm a man sort of stuff here too. I don't know. Okay. The other is you said like when my kids are out, I need to know. And so I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here because you're an educator and a mom.
Yep.
The idea of helicopter parents.
Yes.
And how we break the umbilical cord to let kids fail. And that came up in these discussions too.
Yes.
And that's a tough thing because you always, you know, so I can't let my kid. I always have to be there. You know, you got the parents all there, you know, like this, and they fall down. Oh, you're hurt. Here, there's your boo-boo. Here's your baby. It's like, my mother said, you're good. That hurt. You got to do it again. So let's talk, you know, a bit about even the helicopter concept here.
Yeah, you know. That's you're right. As a mom and an educator, that's a tough balance, right? Because you want them to be successful and you don't want them to hurt. But yet we know in our rational minds, if we don't allow them to fall down, if we don't allow them to fail, if we continually advocate for them, even as they get older, they will never develop those skills. Mm-hmm. And that's tricky. And I think if you think about it, even in terms of as kids grow each year, right? Like what you do for a third grader as a mom, as a parent, is different than what you'll do for a seventh grader, is what you'll do differently for an 11th grader.
You hope.
We hope, but we've got to be more aware of that, right? And I think that's sometimes where we struggle. We get in these habits of, I'm going to schedule your day. I'm going to make sure you've got rides everywhere. I'm going to fix your lunch every morning, which I'm struggling with that because I know if I don't, will my kid eat or not? But yet at what point do I back away and say, bummer, you forgot to make your lunch. You didn't bring it. You are going to be hungry today. You'll remember tomorrow. If we don't, I mean, we know this in our rational mind. If we don't give our kids opportunities to fail, they will not know how to solve problems.
Oh, wow. Okay, we can go on for a couple hours. I know that. And we'll just scratch the surface.
Yeah.
But we're going to wrap it up here. Another concept I want to talk to you about, which is a future thing, is what I call civic literacy,
mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to get into the impeachment stuff, but right now for me, it's a teachable moment.
Yeah.
People like, hello, you're members of a democratic society. You have obligation, not just rights, you have obligation.
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk to you, at a future time there about that and what we're doing in the Clear Creek schools,
awesome.
To foster that concept there,
okay.
that you are a participant in a democratic society. And you have responsibilities, and yes, sometimes it's tough and hard. And everything.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that another time. And then again, the technology build off of that. Before we wrap up, last thoughts, anything, key points you want to make that is timely, that you just want to say, my birthday's coming up, so any big races?
I just signed up for the Slacker for next
Yay.
Year.
I'm wearing the hat.
I saw it.
Yeah, Beth made it. She gave it to me. And she says, you're a walking billboard.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
good for
I'm
you.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, so it'll be a ways away, but super excited about that. My birthday's coming up in May, and I am not shy about that at all. And I love cake. Everyone
okay.
who intersects,
everybody
they,
cake.
Yep, they know that.
Well, you could get all the sugar and carbs, then you can run it off.
Yes.
Your Slacker.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Well, this has been fantastic. I so enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
And, we gave it because I had a lot of the authors coming in too. And plus, you needed a breaking in period. So I think we just need to start setting something up on a regular basis once
fun.
A month or every other month and just get here so we can start not only reporting back to the community what's happening, the latest, but also explore these ideas. Separate from the news in Clear Creek about, like brain development and angst in the teen world. And, so Rebel Without a Cause, remember James Dean?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm really dating myself. Okay, everyone. This is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM 102.7, 103.9. And I've been visiting here with Karen Kwanbeck, our superintendent of schools. Exciting conversation. We'll have this up on my website here in a few days. You could just go to jerryfabianic.com and just go to the menu drop down on KYGT radio and to Thinking Liberally, and that's where it'll be. All right, we'll be back in a few minutes, and let's hear some music, and we'll be right back. Okay, all right, take care.